Blog Talk Radio.
The door is open, the welcome mat is out, and this is It's All About Relationships on Vivid Life Radio. My name is Edie Weinstein, and together we'll be exploring what relationships are really all about. Sometimes they're light and playful, sometimes messy and challenging. Our guests are transformational teachers and authors, artists and musicians in this realm that makes life so sweet. So sit back and relax and enjoy the ride.
I decided I'm going to start every show with a sigh because it's nearly the end of the week and I like easing into the show. It's one of the highlights of my week and hopefully yours too as we're sitting around my dining room table that's getting larger by the moment. And the music that ushered us into the show is by Lyra Project, and they're my friends Rick Denzine and Deborah Lee, and it's Lyra, L-Y-R-A, project.com. And the show is called It's All About Relationships. And what I'm finding more and more is that that's one of the truest of truisms that I know, that everything that happens in our lives is really all about the relationships with the people whose paths we cross, or the planet, the animals, nature, tree beings, whatever you want to call it. And I invite you to join us every week and explore what relationships mean to you. Now, my guest is somebody whose work that I've known of for, it feels like a million years, although she probably hasn't been on the planet a million years, not in this lifetime at least. And one of the delights of this work is being able to interview people whose words really touch me heart and soul. So tonight's guest is Oriah Mountain Dreamer. She's the author of the international best-selling, one of many international best-selling books, the best known is The Invitation. She also wrote a book called The Dance and The Call. They're published by Harper One, and they've been translated into 18 languages. Her much-loved poem, which is my invitation to her work, is The Invitation, and it's been shared around the world. She's trained in a shamanic tradition. Her medicine name, Mountain Dreamer, means one who likes to find and push the edge. So that's my kind of friend here. Using story, poetry, and shamanic ceremony, Oriah's deeply personal writing and her work as a group facilitator and spiritual mentor explore how to follow the thread of our heart's longing into a life where we can choose joy without denying the challenges of being human. Oriah blogs at oriahsinvitation.blogspot.com, and she's very active in Facebook, on Facebook, and it's www.facebook.com/oriah.mountain.dreamer. And then her website is Oriah, and that's O-R-I-A-H.org. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome. And you and I had a conversation a few months ago that was of a bit more personal nature, so I got to know you a little bit then, and I so appreciate the wisdom that you shared with me. And I felt like you were like a cool sister that I'd never met before. So we had some nice chats. And so this is a little bit more formal tonight. You decided that the theme of the show was intimacy with ourselves and the world. What does intimacy mean to you?
Well, I realized at some point, you know, that as I spoke all the time to myself and to others about wanting to live deeply, that one of the ways to describe that is wanting to live intimately, which means, you know, wanting to live close to the moment and what is happening, whether that is, you know, something as simple as eating or something more complicated like a relationship with another human being, but wanting a kind of level of reality and of awareness that brought me close to whatever was in the moment in myself, as much as possible with another, bringing all myself to another, and with the world as a whole.
So do you feel that that's how you, you know, that you're practicing what you preach in every day? It's not just
oh,
you're walking the talk.
Yeah, it's an ongoing learning. You know, some moments are better than others. There's no doubt about it. And I mean, I think I'm probably one of the reasons that I'm better at it, let's say, than maybe I was 30 years ago, is I think I defined intimacy much more narrowly 30 years ago. And I think the culture as a whole tends to focus very much on primary, intimate, and sexual relationships, which are wonderful expressions of intimacy when that's actually happening there. But you know, our experience as human beings and the opportunities for really being present and being intimately connected with ourselves and each other is much bigger than just being confined to that relationship.
Well, you said that the title of the show came to you because you said the grandmothers who visit you in your dream time say over and over, intimacy heals.
That's
so
right.
What does intimacy heals mean to you? What kind of...
Well, you know, so I see these women, this circle of old women who I've seen since I was 30 in my dreams. Actually, I think it was before that, but close to 30. And they also will at times sort of appear in waking meditations. And they have. They've said this line of intimacy heals. And initially, I think, again, I was thinking of it more narrowly. But in a very real way, when I started to feel into what it meant to be fully with something, we know that when we're with something or with someone, you know, bringing our full attention there, with a dilemma or a problem, with a feeling that's arising within us or a sensation, things happen. Change occurs. The heart, the mind, the body opens in ways that it doesn't when it's not getting that kind of attention. And that really, I think, is part of the process of healing where it's needed.
So what creates the blocks to intimacy?
Oh, well.
Yeah, tough question.
Endless,
sorry.
Really. But mostly I would say, you know, we're born into a situation where we have to attach to the lovely but imperfect human beings who have brought us into this world or who are our primary caregivers. And so, you know, they're human. And depending on their level of woundedness, they may not make that attachment particularly easy. So not that we can't attach, we can, but we may find ourselves walking on tiptoes as children, trying to work out the rules and trying truly to keep happy the primary caregiver to whom we're attached. And that can start us off on kind of a leeriness about intimacy. You know, we're not sure what the rules are. We find ourselves getting in trouble and we don't necessarily know how. Or we're, you know, striving our best to be perfect in the belief that we will earn real connection and intimacy with this person on whom we depend, and that doesn't always work. So, you know, we have human beings raising human beings, and so we have a way of not, you know, I think back even to when my sons were young, and I knew far less about myself than I do now, and I kind of sigh about that and wish I had known more, but you can't be more aware than you happen to be in any given moment.
So as adults, when we fear intimacy, is it because we still in some ways feel like those little kids wanting to please mommy and daddy or grandma and grandpa or whoever we think is the source of love in our lives?
Yes, and we fear rejection and abandonment. And depending on, you know, what kind of situation we came out of, we may also feel fear being controlled or punished overtly in some kind of way. So, you know, intimacy has a certain risk to it. It doesn't mean that what you're intimate with, either in yourself or the other or in the world, is going to be pleasant. Mm-hmm. To be intimate with somebody is to be with whatever is arising between you, in you, and in them at the same time. And, you know, there's some pretty dark muck that can arise sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And when that happens, the tendency is to run away, to say, okay, this is getting too close for comfort. Is that what you're finding?
It depends on the person, actually, because we all developed survival strategies when we were young. Some people's survival strategy was to run away and hide. Some people's survival strategy is to move closer.
Mm-hmm.
Is to take care of, is to step into the other person's circle and try and take over, be helpful. You know, so there are all kinds of different strategies we have. Mostly, unfortunately, if things are running off the rails, fairly unconscious. We're not necessarily conscious of the strategies. And that's where intimacy with yourself comes in handy. The more you know yourself, the more real choice you're going to have in relationship with another.
And I can already see the wheels turning in my own head. I would fall into the second category, the one that moves closer, the one that tries to fix, save, heal, cure, you know, the savior behavior, rather than the running and hiding when things get too close for comfort. Mm-hmm. So how do we move through those blocks or disassemble the wall that we've
First you have to bring it to consciousness. So, you know, my general sense is that it helps. Curiosity is invaluable.
Mm-hmm.
you know, something happens, everything's going along swimmingly with a friend or a partner, and then things kind of hit the wall, and it all goes badly, minimally, even after the fact, to really sit down and say, what happened there? In me, because I'm really not going to know exactly what happened to the other person unless they share that with me. But, you know, where did I start to, what feelings arose? Did I start to get a feeling of it all being out of control, of being unsafe, of being highly reactive? What happened there? So some of it is with as much curiosity and as little judgment as possible to just bring our attention to what happens with an open heart and really be with what happens. And it's not a very long trip from there if we can do that, and that's harder than it sounds, and it often helps to work with somebody who can hold that space for us as we do that. But it's not a long trip from there to having hopefully some insights about what did happen, so that as you enter other situations, you can be alert to the old patterns that keep running and hopefully catch them. Now, it helps a lot if you have ways of staying and returning to center as frequently as possible during an ordinary day. And you know, because life is going to throw the unexpected. That's part of the joy and the terror of being a human being.
Yeah. So how do, you know, are there some ideas that you have that you share with people about how to stay in that present moment and not go running, you know, letting your imagination run away with you about what's going on?
Well, it's a funny combination of things, you know, because I mean, I do a daily practice. It's a hard sell in this culture, a daily practice, because I think people feel tired and overscheduled and lacking in enough time to do what is spontaneous. So I strongly urge people to develop some small, 5, 10-minute, 3 breaths even, regular practice that they can use when everything is running smoothly to remind themselves to come to center. And if you do that when things are going well, as things start to go run amok, you're more likely to have something to go to, even if it's just, you know, 3 really full inhales and deep exhales. And if you have something to go to, now you've got a shot at just slowing the whole thing down a little and saying, at least internally, what is happening right here, right now? Because when fear gets a hold of us, of course, that's a tough question to remember to ask.
Mm-hmm. But when we ask that question, we get truth. We get answers rather than second guessing and assuming. You know, my experience has been that when people believe the story that they're telling themselves, they often find ourselves
right.
in immersed in fear. Anything I say, by the way, you know, when I say they or we, I mean me, because
yes.
I can really only speak for me. So that's what I tend to do, and my daily practice is, you know, I wouldn't say a sitting meditation practice, but a conscious bringing myself back to here and now awareness, like, so that the monkey mind doesn't scoop me up and run away with me, which it loves to do. I don't know. Do you have one of those too?
Absolutely. That's what mine does, right?
Yeah.
That's what it does. It's like, you know, lungs breathe, mind races. That's what it does a good deal of the time. The question is whether or not we think that's all that we are. And so, you know, and truly, in particularly close relationships, but it doesn't even have to be, you know, it could be a coworker or something. When people have pushed each other's buttons inadvertently or on purpose, that's everything just kind of takes off at jet speed. And catching that and sort of stepping back and just watching even what's just going on in yourself, not even necessarily what's going on in the room, but what's happening within you, can be a real eye-opener. But you're right, it's not always happy news.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, you do that, and it's not that you find out, I'm just too enlightened for these people. That's
not
generally the news that comes through.
Yeah. So,
you know, what comes through is how I'm contributing to the chaos that's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's going to happen. Life isn't always smooth. It isn't always pretty. And, you know, as I said, you know, in the intro to the show, that love is sometimes, and relationships are sometimes messy and challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the question is, how do we ride those waves gracefully? I mean, how do you do that when it feels like life is knocking you on your butt?
Oh, I'm rarely all that graceful. But I will say that what fills my tank, so to speak, so that I have the energy to meet at least meet some of these, is taking real, it's the same thing, but it's when things are going well, is really being intimately here with myself, with others, with the world, and savoring the wonderful moments, the joy, the taste and scent that is wonderful, you know, the turn of phrase that just tickles the imagination, all of that that happens every day around us, because that's really what I think gives us a sense of being enlivened and having the energy, you know, when that tank is full with that kind of thing, to have the energy when something suddenly seems to go off track, it takes energy to say, wait a minute, what's happening here, and to pay attention inside. So if you don't keep refueling yourself with the intimacy with those things that really you want to savor, it's going to be tough to take a look at when things are running a little ragged.
Okay, so it's about practice. Again, the word practice. It's about practicing feeling, practicing feeling, so that
yeah.
no matter what's going on around you, you'll have the skills to do it.
And, you know, just letting yourself take pleasure in and giggle at what gives you a giggle. I mean, there is a kind of note sometimes, and I can get into this, of seriousness, you know, of kind of, I'm a serious person generally, and I like to work, inner work, outer work, I like to work, and a lot of the times I just need to relax a little and lighten up a little. And that's not always the easiest thing to do. It's not my habit to do that. But just let myself really take pleasure in life that's around
mm-hmm.
me.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So what gives you the giggles? what's your pleasure?
Oh, you know, you name it kind of thing. I think that one of the reasons I enjoy Facebook is that I have this thing because I have very boundary time on Facebook. So I let my news feed decide what I'm going to see. And I delight in the fact that people put all kinds of weird and funny things up there. There was one put up last week about a 4-year-old girl who had woken up, convinced she'd been woken by fireworks. I don't know if there had been fireworks earlier in the day. And so her dad and she are singing You Belong to Me together while he plays his pink ukulele. Did you see that?
I saw it.
It is so sweet. And she says to him about 5 times at the beginning, if I say shh, you have to be quiet
so we can
listen to the fireworks, right? And he is. He's like, every time she goes shh, it's just dead silence. I mean, it's clearly she's the one in charge. There's just a delight in watching something like that, and for no other grander purpose, you know. It's just the delight of these two delighting in themselves, the way where she's calling the shots on everything.
Yeah. Well, my father would have said, just like my sister and I, that we were wrapped around his little. He was wrapped around our little fingers.
Yeah.
That's the impression that I got when I saw it. So it's just magic. We're going to be taking a break in about a minute. So can you tell people before we go to break how they can reach you, what they can find on your website?
Sure. If they go to the website, they're going to find a link to the Facebook page, which is in the name Araya Mountain Dreamer. My personal one is an Araya House, but I really participate most on the Araya Mountain Dreamer page, and a link to the blog at ariasinvitation.blogspot.ca.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So we're going to talk more after the break. Catch you on the other side.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio, talk radio that inspires you to live your ultimate life.
Leap into your day on a high note? Go to vividlife.me, that's vividlife.me, and sign up for daily inspirations from the amazing transformational experts featured on our broadcast, just like the one you are listening to right now. We're here to support your journey towards living a vivid life every single day, regardless of whatever surprises may show up in your life. You'll also receive recommendations and exclusive offers available only to the members of our exclusive community. Visit vividlife.me and receive inspiration in your inbox today.
If beautiful beauty is a $4 billion industry, and there are countless magazines and TV shows giving us the tools to have a perfect look and life, then why are we feeling less beautiful and happy than ever? Something is missing, and that something is the Radiance Factor. Join celebrity makeup artist, life coach, and best-selling author Michelle Phillips every Monday at 8 Eastern Standard Time as she and her guests give you the tools to tap into what can make you and your life uniquely beautiful. Forget the Botox, makeovers, and babble about what you should be doing to be happy and beautiful. It's time to rock who you are.
Are meaningful spiritual experiences important in your life? Do you also love luxury and adventure? There are places in this world that capture our hearts and rejuvenate our spirits. They offer calming serenity, soulful beauty, and deep-rooted connections. They are divine destinations. The Divine Destination Collection offers a carefully curated selection of life-changing travel adventures. You select the dream and the destination. Pick your divine destination today at TravelTDDC.com.
Life Radio connects you with the most current, optimistic, and inspiring information on the planet. Get ready to open your mind, heal your heart, and start living your ultimate life. Go to vividlife.me, that's vividlife.me, for more details on our upcoming broadcast with the world's brightest minds sharing wisdom to uplift your spirit.
Welcome back to the next portion of It's All About Relationships. If you're just joining us, I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, and my wonderful guest is across the border in Canada, Orion Mountain Dreamer. And during the break, we were just talking about the marvels of modern technology and the phenomenon of Facebook. My son calls me a Facebook addict, but I find that it's an amazing way of connecting with people, and that's how Orion and I have been connecting as well over the last several months. Is sharing each other's work on our Facebook pages. What is it about that medium, the social media, that delights you so much, that gives you hope for the future, I guess?
Well, I think there are two things. It is a way for people to connect, and every once in a while I'll put a post up about a chronic illness that I've struggled with, and I become aware when I do that, because of how people respond, that there are a lot of people on Facebook who have limited mobility for one reason or another. So they may be housebound, they may be bedbound, and this is really a window into the world. And I've seen good relationships started and continued, of friendships and support, whatnot. And I know people will say, well, that's not the same as in person. It isn't the same. It's different. I wouldn't say it's necessarily always less than. And certainly for people who have limited mobility, it's an enormous connection to the world. The thing I like about it is that I tend to be really focused in what I do, and I do limit how much I'm on Facebook. But when I go on, there are links to things that I would never hear about. I didn't know the people of Boulder, Colorado, had taken back their public utility, had taken back from a private company the hydroelectric, and were working hard to look at moving it to renewable resources. So sort of local community stuff will often be put up, and a lot of it is good news stories. Mm-hmm. That really, some of it is silly and makes you laugh, and there's nothing wrong with that. But a lot of it is truly wonderful grassroots kinds of things that people are doing all around the world. And that's the other piece, is you're connected to people from all around the world.
Yeah, and that I value also, because I can't say I have insomnia, but there are some times when I'm up in the middle of the night and I don't want to call a friend and disturb them. If I see who's online, I can connect with them. And I'm an incredibly in-person, heart-to-heart, face-to-face social person. So it's not like I'm a recluse just sitting in front of a computer. But it really enriches my life. And I love the idea of people sending energy, praying for each other, sending good wishes, celebrating happy moments and grieving with people. So that's part of intimacy too for me, is to be able to reach out, to enlarge our circle of who we consider friends and family. And Facebook enables us, and other forms of social media enable us to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that that you're there too, that you're that you don't consider it an unhealthy addiction, that as much as you're on.
No, I do think that when we're talking about intimacy with the world, there are ways, and that where you can share appropriately what you feel you want to share, and sometimes people will share very personal things.
Right.
I mean, I tend to write about personal things in my books, so it's not like I feel like I shouldn't tell personal stories on Facebook. I do know, like anything else, and truly anything, human beings are very creative. We can use anything to distract us. And we could use Facebook, we can use Twitter, we can use anything. It's a tool, you decide how you want to use it.
And so is intuition, is a tool. How did you develop yours, your sense of intuition?
Well, I think when I first met the shaman with whom I studied, the thing that was so appealing to me was that he had a way of working that made sense of what had been happening for me all of my life, including lucid dreaming, having some precognitive dreams, not a lot of them, but having a lot of things happen in dreams and then even in awake states that were highly intuitive. And I sort of didn't know what to do with it. In fact, some of the stuff I would pick up I didn't feel was my business to know. I'd walk by somebody and get a flash of their life. I mean, it felt invasive, but I really didn't feel like I was in the driver's seat. And so one of the reasons I trained with this man was that he had a framework. I mentioned one time to him that, early on that I was sort of picking stuff up, and I said, I don't think I should be. I mean, it's not my business. And he said, turn it off. And I said, can I do that? Sure, just turn the sound off, like in the corner, like a television in the corner of the room kind of thing. So he was it appealed to me because I think the intuitive was there, but I didn't really know how and when to use it. It was sort of more just bopping in whenever it wanted to. Now, that's not to say I controlled it, because a lot of our intuition comes from semi-conscious kind of flashes. So if we relegate it all to the, rational, fully conscious mind, we're going to cut off a lot of information that can come through. So it's more learning how to surf the wave of that.
Do you feel like you need to be in a particular state of mind to allow it to come through?
Well, I'm just wondering. There are times when it comes through more clearly, and those are either times when I'm very relaxed or in desperate straits. So in some ways, when I'm sort of really grounded, really relaxed, I went away for a week, a couple of weeks ago on retreat. I went to Northern Ontario where I love the land. That's a place where my body will ground and it's easy for me to open up. And I will have, 6-7 vivid dreams at night, things like that. So when I'm sort of relaxed and really grounded, that will happen. But it's also happened when I've felt quite discombobulated and sort of desperately needed some kind of information. I mean, when we get in a place where we're not even sure what the question is we should be asking, sometimes that intuitive flash will just break through.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it happened to me right at the end of my marriage where things were going very badly, but I really wasn't a thought in my head to go anywhere. And I went to bed one night, and I loved the dark, and I was suddenly terrified of the dark. And we were out in the country, there were, no lights, but I mean, I really loved the dark. And I couldn't figure out what was going on. And the grandmothers, who are this circle of women I see in the dream, said to me, get out of here right now. And I took it at the time that they kind of meant, a limited sort of like I was there alone and that I should go somewhere and be with people. But I think actually in hindsight that they were talking about getting out of the marriage.
Yeah. So do you sometimes feel like you have to interpret what they say, like not take it at face value?
Well, I mean, they'll often say something very limited like that. You know, get out of here now, which at the time I mean, there was a sense of imperative about it. And I got in the car and I drove into the city to see friends. And, you know, I that felt imperative to do. In hindsight, it felt like that was really the beginning of the arc that led to my leaving the marriage. But that wasn't a thought in my mind at the time. When they say something like intimacy heals, you know, I'll come back to that over the years as my own knowledge of intimacy deepens and go, ah, now I get it. And knowing that the same thing will happen in 10 years at a different level.
And is it about trusting the messages? Like you wouldn't have been told them if there wasn't something powerful in them or meaningful in them for you?
Well, I always, you know, I trust the messages, but I don't always trust my understanding of them. So I know that it's entirely possible for me to get something very clear, like intimacy heals, but not really to fully grasp what that means in my own life, what it means in the world, how I can cultivate intimacy. I mean, they're not big on a whole lot of detailed instructions most of the time. And often if I ask a question, they will respond with a question that leads me to deeper contemplation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they want you to work for it. They don't just want to lay it.
Well, I think they want me to get it. And the truth is, most of the time, I know you must know this from all your work with people also. You know, people will, when you work with people and they're working with me, sometimes other people's situations are pretty crystal clear to us about what's going on. Telling somebody rarely does them any good because it's just information. And even if they kind of, for a second, comprehended or I understood what the grandmothers were saying to me, I'm not getting it on a deeper level. Mm-hmm. So it's more about the process and facilitating the other's process, whether it's someone I'm working with or the grandmother's working with me, so that they begin to investigate for themselves what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. So how do we get to know our own heart?
Well, we have to learn to listen to it. At a certain point in my life, I'm happy to say a while ago, I realized that my difficulty was I didn't really know what my heart wanted. Who should I ask, you know, was my kind of feeling at the time.
Right.
So sometimes we haven't developed the facility to feel we have a right even to drop down and see what's going on in our own hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And that can take a long time and a lot of healing to begin to feel like, you know, your heart and mine speak a common language and are certainly linked. But they also each have their own flavor and preferences, and that's okay. That's the richness of the world. And so my knowing mine and being able to be guided by that goes a long way in my living a life where I feel enlivened by the life I choose.
Mm-hmm. And yet, in relationship, oftentimes it seems like hearts are speaking different languages. How do we get the universal translator working?
Yeah, aren't they sometimes? And you know, the thing that makes it most, what interferes most with the translation, of course, is judgment. I wrote a piece this week about my former husband being a photographer, liking to do a lot of photography. So when he said, let's go for a walk, I'd say, are we taking pictures or are we going for a walk? Because I'd end up inevitably standing around getting eaten by mosquitoes while he took pictures.
Right.
And from my perspective, it seemed to me like his taking pictures was taking himself out of the situation somehow. Certainly it wasn't relating to me. I think it probably would have been better if he'd gone for a walk alone if he wanted to take pictures. But I didn't comprehend until recently that for him, taking pictures is what telling stories is for me, and that it brings him more fully into the moment. So what he did pick up at a certain point, because I was kind of annoyed about standing around getting eaten alive, was, you know, he'd try to get me to take my camera, which he had bought for me, and I would say, no, I'd just like to be fully present. Right? Weaving in all the judgment I could about what he was doing with the camera. And I wasn't understanding what he was doing with the camera, for starters. And even if I was getting it right, where are we headed here with this judgment? Not to a happy place.
Mm-hmm. And I did read that. I did read the post. And my other thought was, maybe he wanted to share his joy with you, that his his greatest gift is seeing the world through the camera lens, just like one of your greatest gifts is seeing the world through your heart that you write about. Did that ever feel like part of it for you?
Oh, sure. When we looked at the pictures, I didn't feel like my appreciation of his way of looking at the world, and he took beautiful pictures, was mm-hmm. enhanced by standing on the path and getting eaten by mosquitoes.
Right. Yeah.
He didn't really need me doing that while he was taking the picture. mm-hmm. But, you know, I was surprised at my own, you know, I mean, as in hindsight, as I look at it, I thought, you know, I got frustrated, and so I went to judgment. I didn't go to curiosity of why is this, you know, why is this the way that he does this? What's going on? You know, with open curiosity, not a kind of condemnation, why is he doing this, but what is it here for him? And so I think we need to get that as much as each other is another ourselves, and we have a commonality in our humanness, each other is also wholly other and a mystery to me. Mm. If we could remember that, if we can remember that the other is really a mystery to me, there is no other with exactly my history of experiences, my way of framing things, my body, my mind, my heart, we're never going to be exactly the same, then mm-hmm. discovering some of that mystery becomes the allure, becomes fun.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of what most of us feel when we first fall in love. You know, we want to know everything about this person.
Yeah, and as we, you know, as we grow and develop in a relationship, there's a sense of, for me, of opening a gift, unwrapping the package, and getting mm-hmm. to know who is this self and other. And as somebody who deals with both professionally and personally with codependent tendencies, I like the idea of no spiritual boundaries, but needing psychological boundaries as
mm-hmm.
well. You know, that how do we dance between those two worlds is the challenge.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. So,
and there are moments when we merge,
mm-hmm.
You know, and those are exquisite and wonderful. And how do we, you know, savor that and then separate enough to go and each do what we do, you know, whether it's our creative work or our shared tasks of co-creating a home or, you know, whatever it is. And I think we can have trouble with that transition.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it takes, and again, practice. We keep getting back to the word practice.
Yeah.
That everything is, you know, can be seen as a spiritual practice. When we come, believe it or not, we're almost ready for another break. When we come back,
mm-hmm.
I'd love to talk more about dreams. You were talking about that and mm-hmm. the power of storytelling because you do both so beautifully. So I think that you're welcome. So I think that's a big, you know, a big opportunity for people. And for those that weren't listening during the first portion of the show, once again, tell them about your website and what they can find there.
It's www.oriah.org, and there are a whole collection of writings and some of the poetry and links to the books and to Facebook and the blog.
Marvelous. And you invite people to join you on the on both Facebook pages, your personal and your author page?
Yeah, I really don't participate on the personal page except to share stuff that's already on the author page. Where I participate mm-hmm. is really on the Oriah Mountain Dreamer page.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Great. So I'll catch you on the other side of the commercial break.
Okay.
Thanks.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio, talk radio that inspires you to live your ultimate life.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What is the first step for you personally to finally make the shift you have been seeking? Find out right now by connecting with us on Facebook and on Twitter. My Vivid Life. Well, it's a state of being, complete well-being. Get there today with daily inspiration right to your inbox.
We all need to go out of our mind at least once a day. By going out of your mind, you will quickly come to your senses. Join us at Going Out of Your Mind, Vivid Life Radio with Ed and Deb Shapiro.
We will be discussing profound and meaningful topics that will inspire your life with some of the most brilliant and uplifting people in the world. Join us for our live show on Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern at vividlife.me. We guarantee you will enjoy this journey to your heart.
Ready to experience deep healing and profound change in your life?
Join VividLife.me founder Shane Travis, along with spiritual visionaries Doreen Virtue, Michael Beckwith, Neil Donald Walsh, Panache Desai, Sonia Chiquette, Denise Lynn, and many more, for the magical and soulful Celebrate Your Life retreat in the powerful Vortex Energy of Sedona, Arizona. Your world will transform at the Celebrate Your Life Sedona retreat. For more information, visit CelebrateYourLifeSedona.org. That's CelebrateYourLifeSedona.org.
Just claim it.
Life Radio connects you with the most current, optimistic, and inspiring information on the planet. Get ready to open your mind, heal your heart, and start living your ultimate life. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for more details on our upcoming broadcast with the world's brightest minds sharing wisdom to uplift your spirit.
Welcome back. Final portion of this week's show. It's all about relationships. I'm your host, Edie Weinstein, and my guest is Oriah Mountain Dreamer. And during the break, we were talking about another blocked intimacy that she brought up. What would that be?
I was thinking that for me, the biggest block to intimacy is lying, is untruth. Now, you know, untruths can come in a form of denial, inner denial. I mean, you know, where we're quite sincerely saying, but I really do want to do that, not really acknowledging to ourselves that it's something that we either don't want to do or feel obligated to do, and of course withholding, you know, kind of skipping over certain details that we think is not going to cast us in a good light. Those certainly diminish the intimacy, but for me the biggest block is knowingly lying. And you know, you have to wonder at our own psyche and the universe that this, you know, I would say nobody likes being lied to, but I have a sort of history with my family where there was a lot of lying. So I'm particularly sensitive to this. And in my last marriage, unknowingly, in any conscious level, I chose a man who habitually lied about things that didn't matter. well as things that did, you know. And when I was leaving, he had been caught in a particularly large lie, and he said, "You're leaving to punish me." And I said, "No." I said, "I just got that it's never going to stop, is it?" And to his credit, he sort of sat there and he said, "Well, I would say I'm going to stop and I'd mean it, but no, it's not going to." And I said, "Right. Wow.
Okay."
And, so, and that, you know, he told the truth in that. And then I said,
he told the truth.
Exactly. Yep. He finally looked on his face and I said, "Oh, I just got that. I don't know half of it, do I?" And he said, "No." And he started to speak. And I said, no, don't tell me. Whatever lies I didn't catch in the last 10 years, I don't need to know about them now because I'm leaving. So, you know, there's only so much wear and tear any relationship can take, and lying has a pretty high wear and tear factor. And that's true in a friendship, with a colleague, you know, with a boss or someone you're supervising, with a client, with anybody. That lying really jeopardizes the trust, of course. And the problem with lying is that it jeopardizes the trust that the other person has in themselves. I mean, I began to feel like I couldn't tell what was true anymore because it apparently I had been believing, I repeatedly believed things that then turned out to be lies. Mm-hmm. So the real damage of the lie, I mean, it does destroy the relationship, but habitual lying also really undermines the other person's ability to feel like they can know what's true.
Right, right. And
that takes a long time to get over.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about on your, there was something on your Facebook page about the heart being closed for repairs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I think that was your direct quote.
I think so, yes. I can't remember where I got it from, actually, to tell you the
okay.
truth.
Yeah.
But I do, and I'm, you know, I'd seen this wonderful graphic of a door that was clearly under repair.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, there are times when we have to withdraw, kind of lick our wounds, and recover, you know,
mm-hmm.
and learn to trust ourselves again more than anything. Now, ironically, I actually think that I chose someone who did lie so much because for me there was unfinished business from the pattern of lying in my childhood family. There was, I actually think I was attracted to him for the healing of completing that business in myself. But that wasn't really a happy story.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you learned with every, you know, that
I did.
You know,
yeah.
Everything happens, you learn from it. And you know, you're, I don't know the source, and maybe you can tell me, but the invitation, did that come through as a, I can call it a channeled piece, but a guided piece, or from your own life experience?
Yeah, I don't tend to use the word channeled because it implies, to me, a kind of passivity on the part of the person.
Yeah.
I wrote it in, it was the first draft, in one fell swoop. I sat down after a party late at night and wrote it, and it just sort of came completely, mostly out of my frustration with the normal, totally normal level of social interaction at a party. You know, what do you do, where do you live, who do you know? And then I sent it out the next morning without, you know, even kind of rewriting it at all. In a newsletter that I was sending to about 500 students at the time. And then it just had a life of its own in the world and continues to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one of those moments where I just sat down and wrote. And I, you know, the format of it is based on a writing exercise that I'd received from David White. And he based that on a wonderful poem of his called Self-Portrait. So that mm-hmm. pattern of it doesn't interest me. What I really want to know is from that writing exercise.
Yeah, I mean, when you read it, do you identify with it, like these are my words or they came through me, or is it this is somebody else's writing?
No, it feels, even when I read it now, it feels very like me. And I'd say that although there have been huge changes in my life and I like to feel I've learned some things since then, that it still holds true in terms of what it is that really interests me most, that I do want to know what people ache for. I do want to know, and I'm uplifted all the time by seeing people who have gone through horrible things, daring to dream of, you know, bringing things to life and manifesting them in their own life, in the world, in their communities. I mean, human resilience is incredible. So all of the things that are there, I would say, are still very much true for me.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, it's probably a very vivid thread of my own longing.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of longing, on your Facebook page, there's a Rumi quote. There are lovers content with longing. I'm not one of them. What does
mm-hmm.
that mean to you?
Well, that's a quote from a translation by Coleman Barks, and actually it's at the beginning of the book, The Dance. So I wrote the invitation first, and it was really an expression of this longing. And when I say longing, I don't mean a kind of craving that wants to make everything happen. In some ways, the thing for me about a very deep soul longing is that it doesn't even necessarily seek to be fulfilled. It's more a guidance system on what matters and what
mm-hmm.
doesn't. But I was aware, after having articulated that in the book, that I wasn't living all the time according to my longing. I wasn't letting that guide me all the time. And that's really what the dance became about, which was, how do I live that longing in an ordinary human life? And because I'm not content with just longing. I want the longing there. I want to be able to always feel that and follow that thread. But it's really about, now what? How do I go out in the world, in my life, and live guided by that longing, by what matters and what doesn't? And, of course, we live in a busy, busy culture with 1,000 distractions that say, oh, you should try this, do this. And so you really have to be pretty committed and fierce mm-hmm. about sticking with your longing.
Oh, goodness. Boy, that really touches my heart. That would be me. I'm definitely mm-hmm. fierce is a word that I actually like using, because we think about fierceness being angry and teeth bared and claws bared. But mm-hmm. fierceness for me is, you know, I love fiercely. I do things passionately, and it sounds like you mm-hmm. do too a
yeah.
lot of the time. That you live juicy, I guess is how I would say that. Yeah. So can you speak about the power of storytelling, because you're an amazing storyteller?
Well, thank you. I think, you know,
You're
for
welcome.
Me, it's how I make meaning. We are meaning-making animals. And the truth is, we're all making story. I happen to do it through words. Some people do it through pictures. Some people do it through dance, there are 1,000 ways to tell stories, and we're doing it all the time. What helps is if we could do it a little bit consciously.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also be conscious about what stories we want to receive and how much credibility and weight we want to give to them, where we want them to land in us, so to speak, you know. And any given day on any given radio show or a television show, there are stories being woven all the time. And that, you know, as human beings are meaning-making animals, and the way we do that is mostly through symbol. I sometimes get concerned that the culture is losing some of its ability, I don't always feel this way, but once in a while, to think metaphorically, to understand that symbol is the language of soul. And people get kind of driven to start taking literal meanings from things all the time. I actually heard somebody tonight talking about on the radio that the Irish Parliament is looking at getting rid of their Senate. And the woman said, they are literally going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I thought, mm-hmm. okay, you don't understand what literally means. There's no baby actually involved with this.
Right.
But, and that may be me taking her too literally, but I do find a kind impoverishment of imagination sometimes happening. Let our imaginations tell us more about the story that we're living, which is what happens in dreams.
Mm-hmm. So how can we use dreams as a tool to, as a teaching tool or doorways into our own guidance?
Mostly by giving them some care and attention. People mm-hmm. will tell me all the time, I don't remember any dreams. And if I'm working with them individually, I'll say, well, how about, you know, just for the next week, you just pay attention and note any that, and they will inevitably have a couple of dreams that they remember. So, you know, psyche responds to, we're paying attention now. Mm-hmm. And will give us information as we pay attention. And so the more we pay attention to our dreams, the more we receive from dreams. Now, people get frustrated because they say, why didn't the dream just say, do this?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the same reason we talked about with the grandmothers asking me questions. First of all, the language of psyche is symbol, so we have to work with our own dreams enough to begin to learn our own inner language. And yes, there are commonalities because there are archetypes and things in the collective unconscious and culture that we draw on. But we all have our own little particular accent on that language, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, however you are with those, I tend to write my dreams. I sometimes do, if a dream feels really important but is ended in a frustrating place where I need to know more, I will do an active imagining. Relax deeply, go back into the dream and begin to ask some questions of the other characters in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly doing artwork. I've been worked with people who will do movement around dreams, how certain aspects of the dream raise feelings and how what the movement is that goes with that. I think it doesn't matter how we do it. It's just whether or not we give it our attention.
Mm-hmm. Because we're worth it. I do lucid dreaming probably every night, and mm-hmm. there are times when I go into a dream saying, okay, tell me what I need to know,
mm-hmm.
And I go back into dreams too, and mm-hmm. I've learned that there aren't necessarily, you know, dream symbols are good for starters, but every dream is as unique as the dreamer, and
mm-hmm.
you know, the symbols are what they mean to us.
Exactly.
So I think that's, you know, important. And as we're winding down, there's a question that I, you know, want to ask you. You know, you're talking about longing. How can we respond to our deepest heart longing?
With a bow. and follow,
okay.
You know, sort of bow and follow. When you connect with something that feels that deep, that essential, and you have to do a fair bit of self-exploration to know when it's that deep and that essential and not just other things going on a more surface level, but you touch that, that's a gift, an unbelievable gift. Bow and follow it. Let it guide you in what matters and what doesn't.
And you speak of life being worthwhile when we love the world. Can you elaborate on that? How do we love the world?
Yeah, that's a tough one, isn't it, sometimes? And it's very connected to how we love our bodies also. You know, if it has to do with being willing to be with what is, with our hearts open. This body, the one I have now, not the one I imagine I had 30 years ago, not the one I imagine I'll have if I ever exercise as much as I say I'm going to.
Yeah.
And this world, not the one that we romanticize, you know, on Mad Men used to be, not the one that we imagine we're about to create, but the one we've got right now. This world, with all the mess, with all the difficulties, with all the incredible beauty and expressions of love and compassion, to love this world right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually think that if we cultivate that intimacy, we let what's happening in the world touch us, the good stories and the hard stories both. We let it evoke our joy and our sorrow. It will cultivate us a collective wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. I wish I could talk to you like this all night. This is amazing. Well, we do eventually get together. I was actually going to be up in your neck of the woods, and then plans changed. The universe had other plans. I think we're going to have a slumber party. I don't know if you're an all-night talker, but I just get the sense that we could talk a long time.
I'm sure we could. Yes.
Yeah, this is marvelous. So thank you so much for being on the show. And again, if people want to find you, they can go to www.oriah.org. They can visit you on Facebook under oriah.mountain.dreamer. And I'm so thrilled that you're here, and I wish you your heart's desires. So
it's
I thank you very much.
Pleasure, Edie. Thank you so much.
Take care. Okay, and thank you, listeners, and I will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us here on It's All About Relationships on Vivid Life Radio, opening your heart and mind to the possibilities that are there for you to create a life that is filled with love. Until next week, wishing you healthy and fulfilling relationships and sending hugs from here.
Life Radio connects you with the most current, optimistic, and inspiring information on the planet. Get ready to open your mind, heal your heart, and start living your ultimate life. Go to vividlife.me, that's vividlife.me, for more details on our upcoming broadcast with the world's brightest minds sharing wisdom to uplift your spirit.